You can open your Bibles to Luke chapter 15 for a sermon this morning. I suppose most of the time this is true, but maybe more so sometimes than others. Often when I prepare a sermon, the things that I speak on are the things that I find in the Word that challenge me and that convict me and that I see as need for growth in my life. And this morning is no exception for that. Perhaps even more so, I'm going to be talking to myself and allow you to listen in, and I trust that you can find inspiration as well. Now, I introduced this chapter already at our brother's meeting Wednesday night in just a very brief meditation. I had read this chapter earlier this week. But I want to look at this chapter in a slightly different light than what I presented it Wednesday evening. Here's what intrigued me. Let's just read these first two verses of Luke 15. I'm going to save the title for a little bit. I'll give it to you soon. The first two verses of Luke 15 say this: "Then drew near unto him," who's him? Jesus. "Then drew near unto Jesus all the publicans and sinners for to hear him." Let's just take this as we go a little. So you have, who's drawing near to Jesus? Tell me again. Publicans and sinners are drawing near to who? I got it. "And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them." Who's the other group of two people who are present in this setup? Who are they? Pharisees and scribes. And we're going to do this. Jesus is here representing his Father. So we're going to do that as well. "Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him, and the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them." And in response to that, Jesus gave three stories, three parables. Now, what we often think about in these, what's the common theme? I already mentioned it Wednesday night. Remind me, the common theme between the three parables in Luke 15 is what? Lost things, okay? Lost things. And so this group of people looks at this relationship, this man with these lost things, right? And they say, how can that be? How is it that this man who claims to be at one with the Father is in an active relationship with these people, eating with them, visiting with them, welcoming them into his presence? And they say, that's a problem. And these three stories, Jesus addresses this question for them: why he relates to people and to lost people. Now, who were the tax collectors and the publicans? The tax collectors or the publicans, they were Jews who were, maybe you'd call them turncoats. They were ones who became tax collectors for the Romans. It's like they had turned their backs on their own people. They were compromisers. Nobody liked them. They were cheaters. Everyone thought they were bad people, and they probably were. And they grouped them with the sinners. Now, when it says sinners, I don't think this term simply means that some people are sinners and some aren't. We know all are sinners. But they're saying, listen, the very people who are unashamed of sin, these are the adulterers, these are the thieves, the robbers, I don't know what all they were, but these people that are meeting with Jesus are very obviously the scum of society. They're lost, not on the same level as us, right? And they group them together. This is what they ask, why is Jesus doing this? The Pharisees and the scribes, on the other hand, are the religious, right? Now, I'm not a very good artist, but if I had to draw, people to go with this, I would do something like this. I don't know if this is the religious, the separated, right? This is the people who are the Anabaptists of that first century. These are the ones who grew up in a church that taught them to be separated, that taught them what it means to live out the Bible in a practical, holy way, what obedience is, what keeping the decrees means, right? That's the group of people. And I'm putting myself right here this morning, and you're welcome to join me here. I think this is largely who we are. We've grown up in a conservative setting, we'll call it. We've grown up, most of us, many of us, in homes where we've been taught obedience and holiness and the Bible from little on up. But it's this group that's looking down at this group and saying, why, Jesus? What are the three stories? He gives, in order to explain this, he gives 1, 2, 3 stories. The first is the story about a sheep. And I'm not going to take the time to read all of these stories. The story of the lost sheep. A man had 100 sheep. One night he brings them in and he realizes, wait, did I miscount or was there only 99? No, I counted again. There is only 99 sheep. One is missing. And so he heads out looking for a lost sheep. Just one, right? Just one. And he finds it. And he brings it back, and he throws a party. And he says, this is what happens in heaven when tax collectors and sinners repent. Do you see it, Mr. Pharisee? That's what he's saying. He's telling them the first story. This is why I'm going after them. Just like you would say a shepherd who goes after one lost sheep is a committed shepherd, right? One who cares about them, one who values that life. And he went and he found it and he rejoiced and he said, come rejoice with me. Okay? Jesus is saying, all right, you understand, Mr. Pharisee? Maybe you missed it. Let's tell you another story. There's a woman who loses a coin and she looks all through her house. In fact, she sweeps every corner of every closet, under every couch. I will find this coin, she says. And sure enough, she finds it. And when she finds it, she calls her friends and her neighbors together saying, rejoice with me, for I've found the peace which I had lost. There will be more joy in the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Do you get it, Mr. Pharisee? This is what I'm trying to tell you. This is why I relate to these people. But in case you missed it, here's one more. There's one sinner, a lost son. Now, this is the most famous parable, I suppose, of these three. Perhaps one of the most famous in scriptures. There's a son who's born to a godly man, as far as we know. And then he has another son, two sons who grew up with the same father, with the same home. And the one gets this idea, it's not good enough here at Dad's house. Give me my half of the share. I'm going to party. And he takes his father's money and he goes and he lives a wild life. He goes to the movies. He goes to the football games and the soccer games and the hockey games. He goes to the bars and he goes until he can't go anymore because he's out of money. And he's hungry. And so he goes and he finds a farmer. Can't I just feed your pigs for a little wage? He says, well, you can feed the pigs. And so while he's feeding the pigs, he eats the husks. And while he's sitting there, he said, this is ridiculous. I could go home. Even my dad's servants are better off than this. I could go home and be a servant and I could actually have food and earn a wage. That's what I'll do. I'll head back to my father. And you have the son returning. But this is a little fuller version. It's not just the woman found the coin and she says, rejoice with me. Let's read this one, starting at verse 20. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said, he interrupted him, it seems like, he never finished what he was going to say. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. This is number three. This is the third reason that Jesus said, this is why you'll find me in this company, because I came to seek and to save the lost. And whether it's a lost sheep who made this choice on his own, or whether it's a lost coin who's just simply, well, that's an inanimate thing, right? He happened to be lost. I don't know for sure how that all plays in. It's a story. All parables fall short at some point. Or whether it's a son who willfully turned and left his father's house and is now coming back. He says, I want to save people. That's what I'm here for. Do you understand this, Mr. Pharisee? These three parables show what's going on in seeking lost sinners. Now, that's not what I'm going to preach about. That's just the introduction. We'll get going. Jesus answered their question with these three stories, but he answered their grumbling with, we're going to say 3B, with the rest of the story of the prodigal son. Why is it that you can't see this working relationship, he's saying? Why do you place yourselves on this plane, and you look down at these people, and you can't have the mental capacity and the spiritual mindset to process why the Son of Man would be reaching out to the sinners and reaching out to the publicans, reaching out to the tax collectors, reaching out to the outcast of society? Why don't you understand that that's who he would come to save? The title this morning is Grace in the House. Grace in the House. The first question was, what's going on with these tax collectors and sinners and Jesus eating with them? But the second question is, why are you grumbling? Why are you bent out of shape? Why can't you understand my heart of compassion for the lost? And I think the second son, as he wraps up these stories, it finishes in a little different way than they were expecting. And he kind of lets it hang. And I really believe it's to answer that in their minds. And that is primarily what I want to look at this morning. And just this whole idea of self-righteousness and how it shapes us, how it drags us down, how it affects relationships, how it keeps us from understanding the ways of Jesus and keeps us from the Father. So let's finish this story. We quit at verse 24. Let's continue on 25 to the end. Now, his elder son was in the field. And as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. There's joy and rejoicing in the Father's house, right? And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. How does it finish? I have a feeling, I don't know, perhaps Jesus broke down and wept at this point as he thought about the blindness of the hearts of these Pharisees. And he realized, see, that's what he wept over just in a few more chapters when he looked out over Jerusalem and he said, So often I wanted to gather you under my wings, but you didn't have interest. Self-righteous. We've got this under control. We're okay. That's the thing that broke the heart of Jesus. And so this story isn't ultimately about just a wayward son, but it exposes the heart of those who stand at the edge of the feast but don't enter in. Self-righteousness is really hard for us to see in ourselves. It's a little like, maybe this is a poor example, but it's a little like bad breath. It's much easier for someone else to know it than for you to know it yourself. But there's rarely people who are courageous enough to tell you, right? We don't usually go up to people and say, well, let's put the illustration aside, you're really self-righteous. I see you looking down on others. It's kind of a subtle thing that we don't usually have the courage to point out in people's life, but we sure can see it when we see it. And it is a dangerous thing. See, the Father's feast is open to both sons, but only the one, as far as we know. We don't know how the story ended, but there was one who enjoyed the blessing, the joy, the forgiveness, the relationship that was offered. One did. The other one, it appears, did not. Let's look first at the position of the older brother. He's physically close, but he's spiritually far away. He's living in the house, and yet he's not at one with the Father. He's in the field, and he's working for the Father. So you'd say, yep, he's at home, he's a son, and yet he's not embracing the heart of the Father, the desires of the Father, the relationship that the Father is looking for. And he hears the sounds of celebration, and he refuses to enter in. Not only didn't he enter in the house, he didn't join the feast. He was out obeying the Father, but it was very much of an external relationship, it appears, rather than a relational connection. And because of that, he resents his Father's mercy. And this is where it's almost steps on the toes of last Sunday's sermon. Brother Larray talked about the people who just couldn't see the mercy of the Father for what it really was. Their eyes were evil, it says, because God was good. That's what I see in this young man. He saw life with the Father as labor. He was all about working for the Father, but he didn't delight in the things that his Father delighted in. Secondly, the heart condition of the older brother, closely related, but it seems like he lived with a life of merit instead of mercy. As he thought about life and his position as a son in the Father's house, he says, as we read his words, he says, well, I earned this, right? I worked for you. I obeyed you. I deserve, right? And he doesn't, because he disobeyed you and he left the house. And he valued doing right more than being loved. The Father said, I want to bring you into this party with. I want you to come in and rejoice with those who were lost and are now found. But instead, his identity was wrapped up in obedience. This dutiful obedience. I was out in the field working for you. Now I'm supposed to just come party because someone who disobeyed you came back and you decided you wanted to love him? He just is he just doesn't have the mental capacity or the heart, really, to enter into this. And I really think, for me, I need to test myself here about whether I'm the older brother or not. Just think back to I try to view, you know, what's my view of church and relationship with the Father, relationship with God, being one of his children. Probably when I was younger and I had read this, there would have rose up in me something sort of like this. If I heard the son say, listen, I served you all my life and I obeyed you. I never disobeyed you. And you never gave me a fatted calf. It would have been easy to say, well, he did sort of deserve that, didn't he? A little like the people in the story last Sunday. Well, I mean, I did work longer than the people who came at the ninth hour and at the 11th hour, right? I did. I mean, you've got a bit of an argument there, don't you? See, when we think like that, we're in trouble, I think, because somehow, well, what was it? What was it that made this young man tick? What was it that made him think that this is where I want to be? Well, one of them was work. Work made him tick, right? Work made him tick. He said, that's what I've been doing for you, Father. Isn't that what you wanted? Or keeping the commandments. I've been obeying you. Isn't that what you wanted? Haven't I measured up? And now this brother of mine who didn't measure up gets a party, and I don't get a party? See, that's a broken view of relationship with the Father. He's basing his whole premise on relationship on merit. I deserve this. I bought this. I bought my way into this, as it were. I did what it took. And because of that, when we view life that way, I think one of the things that happened is often we become someone who blames others. You see him now turning to his brother, and he says to his father, this thy son, right? He doesn't refer even to him as brother. He says, this son of yours, and he blames him for what has happened, a little like Adam saying to God, this woman that you gave me, told me to eat, it's your fault. I really think that is one of the things that happens in the heart of a Pharisee way too easily. Is blaming others, a life of blame, is often interwoven with the older brother's way of relating to God, and it ruins a lot of things. What's the Father's response to this? Third part here is the Father's tender response. We see deep mercy coming from him. I want to point out five things that the Father does. And if you're in the older brother category, if you are if you're one who grew up in the house, in the Father's house, and perhaps you feel a little deserving, and you feel like, I didn't do anything that bad. That's the point of this parable. It's not just about Jesus eating with publicans and sinners. He's talking to the Pharisees who are grumbling. And look at what the Father does. The Father here is, I believe, is a type of Christ, and how Christ is trying to reach these Pharisees as well, and trying to reach our hearts. The first thing that he does is he goes out to him. He goes out to him. Just as he ran to the younger brother, he goes out to the older brother. And I want to take some time to make this practical at the end, but I want you to be thinking. I found this deeply moving on a number of levels. One is just simply in my relationship with the Father and how I view others who perhaps I view as sinners, okay? What is my view? Am I looking down on other people? But I also want us to apply this to us as fathers as well and learn from this Father. How do we relate to our children? How do we relate to our sons? How do we relate to our children when they disappoint us and when they do things that are wrong or perhaps that are sin? What does this Father do? What is the heart of God that he's calling us to emulate, to display? He goes out to him. God doesn't ignore our resistance. He pursues after us. The Father came out and the Son is angry. He's really angry. Now, when I'm around people who are angry, I tend to be the same. I want to respond that way. And when somebody is disobeying my authority, I want to come down and say, listen, who do you think I am, right? I don't deserve to be treated like this. What did I do to deserve this? He comes out to him. And just, well, the younger son, he came out, he ran and he hugged him. Here the son is perhaps on the porch, or maybe he's out in the yard. Maybe his arms are crossed and he's not coming in. What's the father going to do? Well, the father comes out. And he doesn't come out with a fist. He doesn't come out with a loud voice. The second thing he does, it says he entreats him. He entreated him. Verse 28. Not commanding him to join, not commanding him to come into the house, not saying you must come in here, but he entreats him. He invites him into this relationship. He's not manipulating him, but he's inviting him. He's entreating him. He's begging him. I imagine he has tears coming down his face. And I can't help but believe that as Jesus shared this parable as well, that he chose this word entreat as a contrast word to the word that the Son used. He says, I obeyed all your commands. And he says, that's not what the Father comes out. That's not what the Father's about, is commanding. It's about entreating. It's about entreating. And so the Father doesn't command, but he entreats. You can stay out here. You can continue to receive your wages. You can receive the wages of sin. Or you can come in, and I beg you to come in. It's the same word that Paul uses when he writes to Philemon. And he says, I could tell you to take in Onesimus. I could command you. I'm an apostle. I could tell you, accept him. Take him in as a brother. But instead, I entreat you. I entreat you as a brother, as a fellow laborer. Would you accept him? Would you take him in? Would you forgive him? And not hold the sin against him when I send him back to you? You can read that story in the book of Philemon's. The third thing he does is he speaks graciously. Again, some of these overlap with each other. He says, you're always with me. And he speaks kindly, I assume with a low voice, not a raised voice. And his words are dripping with care and compassion and love and mercy, an invitation into joy. If he had come out commanding, it would have kind of defeated the purpose of, look, this is a party inside. This is a joyful occasion. This is a time of rejoicing. Now you come and enjoy it with us, right? No, you come, right? What is our vision for our children? What are we calling them to? He reminds him, number four, of his place. He reminds him of his place. He says, "You're my son. Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine." He says, you still have a place in my home. You are my son. Just because I'm rejoicing with God over the return of my prodigal doesn't mean that that puts you out, right? It's not an exclusive thing. You are always my son. The father says, "You are always with me." I think that the problem was that the deepest void in the older brother's heart is that he lived in the father's house, but he found it unsatisfying. At least when he realized what the father was doing for his other son, suddenly he said, "Wait, I'm getting cheated out of something. I'm not satisfied with the return on my investment. I have worked, I have obeyed, I have listened. This is what I get? This is what he gets?" He lived with the privileges of an elder brother. He ate at his father's house every night. He was an heir to everything that was left, and he wasn't happy with the situation. That's what the elder brother, that's the, where he was. And I want us to just think about ourselves in relation to that as well. And fifthly, he offers him all that he has. "Everything that's mine is yours." And it's a very lavish grace. The grace that was in this house from this father, from this man, was flowing out of this house. It was reaching both sons, enough to reach both sons. And I believe that as Jesus told that story, he must have looked right at the Pharisees and scribes. And this morning I feel like he's looking right over top of their heads, and he's looking at me and he's saying, "Everything I have is yours as one of my children. Do you understand the privilege that it is to be my child, to live in grace and mercy and forgiveness? No, life won't always be fair. You might not always feel like life is treating you fair. All that I have is yours. What more could you wish for? There's an inheritance. An inheritance is for a son, not for a slave." Now, one of the interesting things, though, is that he doesn't draw that out. He kind of stops there. And the story just hangs. And we're left to wonder, what did he say? What did he do? Did it work? Did the father's appeal break his heart? I don't know. But the question is, does it break my heart? Does it draw me in? Does it woo me? Does it change me? Does it soften me? Does it cause me to rejoice in sinners repenting, in restoration? Come in and celebrate grace. Come in. Well, the fourth part is lessons for churchgoers today. And I'm not going to spend much time here. I trust you've been making some deductions yourself. But I think one of the greatest tests of whether we love mercy or whether we're stuck as a judgmental Pharisee and scribe is whether we feel mercy toward sinners, whether we feel compassion toward those who fail, whether we feel a sense of grief and desire for them to find restoration. It is so easy if this is where we view ourselves, we're up here somewhere with Jesus and the publicans and sinners are down here. We're not going to have that heart of compassion that reaches out, that forgives, that does whatever it can to make sure people know they're loved and they're wanted and bringing them in. Is your heart moved to woo and to rescue sinners? Or are you disgusted at their behavior? It is fascinating to me. In my Bible, it's just across the spread. In the next chapter, 16:14, there is a fascinating verse here. It says, "The Pharisees also were covetous. The Pharisees also who were covetous heard these things and they derided him. So you have this group of people, not only are they looking down on others, but this gives a little window into them being covetous. And I don't know what all they were coveting. Maybe it was the praise of men. Maybe it was the things that they couldn't do. Because they were Pharisees, they loved to party, but they couldn't because they had to go to church, right? They loved to go serve the flesh, but they couldn't because it wouldn't look right to do it in a suit coat, right? It says they were covetous. They wanted to do things, and they couldn't. Or perhaps they did and concealed it. Pharisees, elder brothers. Perhaps the elder brother wished that he could have enjoyed the partying that his younger brother enjoyed. Maybe he was driven by covetousness too. It certainly is a lesson for churchgoers today. Another lesson is that the elder brother is lost too. Even though he lives in obedience, if he's living without joy and living without a relationship with the Father, he's lost. Grace doesn't stop at the sinner. The same mercy extended to the prodigal also was extended to the self-righteous. We read about another self-righteous person in chapter 18. It seems like Jesus had so much confrontation here with this group of people. We can read about it in Luke 18, verses 9 to 14. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in a week, and he gives his whole list. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And Jesus says, I'll tell you who received that mercy. The grace that is in the Father's house reached who in that story? Yes, it reached the sinner. It reached the contrite. It reached the sorrowful. It reached the one who bowed his head and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. What are the lessons for parents today? The fifth place. And lastly, lessons for parents today. I don't know what you face as a parent. Is there grace in your house? Do your children find grace in your house? Do they find an invitation into a relationship? It is true that, especially as our children are younger, we do command our children. We tell them yes and no. I see in this story a moving of that relationship. And as you have older sons in the home, you see a father who is now entreating his son. He's begging his son into a relationship, begging him into the house where there's grace, where there's forgiveness, and where there's mercy. Don't get angry with your children. Don't raise your voice with your children. You're calling them into a relationship, into a place of rejoicing, into a place. This was a place of gathering for joy because of what had happened. Again, he didn't use anger to bring him into that. He begged him, he entreated him. I find that to be very challenging. Build relationships with your children. And relationships, we often hear, are built from two-way communication. And so, again, as a father and as a son, you need to have both. You need to listen to your children, your daughters. I'm kind of talking about sons because that's what this story is about. But as daughters, too, enter into their world. Listen to them. Two-way communication, not just commanding them, but listening to their hearts, winning their hearts. We want our children to obey. We want them to behave, whether they're 5 or whether they're 25. We want to see our children grow up to respect us and to represent who we are and what we taught them as parents, right? It's important to us. At least it is to me. And when I see that being, when it brings out the Pharisee in me when they're not representing what I wish they would. It's hard for me to have grace in the house, but I want to. That is my desire. See, it's a master and a slave that have a commanding relationship. This father was entreating his son into the home where there was grace. Come in. The feast is open. The invitation is clear. You're invited, whether you are the younger son or the elder son. There's room in the house. God is extending his grace. Come in and rejoice. The prodigal and the elder brother alike are both invited into the house to experience God's mercy. May we be men and women who do understand this relationship. Jesus came to save the lost. Do we care about the lost? And if we don't, what does it say about me? It points back to this question, is why can't you understand this? Something is fundamentally wrong, and maybe we are the elder brother in the house, or maybe we are the Pharisee, and maybe Jesus has something he wants to teach us. May God help us to hear the lesson, to experience his grace, and to be those who are also filling the house, whether it's our homes, or whether it's this church, or whether it's our lives and the friends that we have, be people of grace and mercy.